honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today in Henderson, Nevada with Lester Bergwart, 94-year-old veteran of World War II who was also in uniform during the Korean and Vietnam War eras. I want to thank Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for connecting me to Mr. Bergwart, or Dr. Bergwart if we account for all the educational achievements this self-described dumb farm kid from Western New York has piled up. We'll hear about his honor flight experience in a bit, but first I want to fully understand a much different flight. Back when he was 19 years old, in the aft end of a TBM Avenger, a flight that left him with compression fractures and 5 vertebrae in his lumbar region. That TBM was practicing a glide bomb run.
You're counting down the elevation, the altitude, and he realizes that he's going to overshoot the target, so his adjustment is to push down on the stick to put it into a steeper dive.
You got it.
But you're sitting
back on target.
Right. But he's changing the angle.
Yeah.
You're like on one of those roller coasters that drop straight down, but you're facing backwards.
I'll be doggone. That's a good. Yeah.
Okay. So what are you experiencing in the back of that plane? Help me understand it from your perspective.
Well, when I wound up hitting the seat, coming down on that seat, it took my breath away. And I thought, oh my God, you've got a farmer's back. At age 18, in the back of this aircraft, you'll be walking around stooped, such as a couple of my uncles were.
Because when he put it into that steeper dive, your body floats up to the canopy, to the lid.
Yep.
And then when he straightened it back out, you get slammed back into the seat.
Well, the aircraft comes up and hits you.
Uh-huh.
Yes. You're slapped down. Everything that's loose, everything that was up above the overhead comes down or meets the aircraft. I was just one of the free-floating bodies.
So you know now that impact compressed your spine and injured you pretty badly, but at the time, you just thought you could tough it out and you'd be okay?
Oh, yeah. My uncles walked around. My dad walked around.
So what happened after that?
Well, I was discharged.
Because you only had a few more months to go.
Yeah.
So you didn't receive a medical discharge because you didn't say anything, but you finished out your enlistment.
Right. Nobody asked me about injuries. I wasn't bleeding. It was an injury that you couldn't see unless you understood the tender back.
And how bad was it? How did that affect you after that?
As long as I didn't act my age, no problem. I had to be careful how I moved. I knew what would cause pain. If I moved improperly, my legs could go out from under me. But I didn't demonstrate that because I said, wait a minute. If I do have this injury, the military will not take me back. So I never pushed it. I didn't demonstrate that while I was in the National Guard. I didn't demonstrate that while I was in Army Reserve. And in 2005, I finally received the court order saying that, yes, that is a service-connected injury, and I was awarded 100% disability. Here I am. I can't walk unassisted. Anyway, what more is there?
I'm curious. So those people that you went to school with in Hamburg, you mentioned that after Pearl Harbor, the seniors were signing up, and you saw things change there in your small hometown. Were there any of your friends, people you knew in high school or in the Navy, who were killed during World War II?
Oh, yes. Our valedictorian died on the beaches of Salerno. Another one, Pete, wound up on one of the Pacific Islands. He came in. Slammed his desk top down after he extracted his books, bid the homeroom teacher a fond farewell. He said, I'm going to join the Marines. He did, and I guess he got out of boot camp and was in one of the invasion armies, and he was killed. My dear buddy, Ed, went with the army and was killed in flight school. He managed to wreck one of the army's trainers and killed himself.
Well, and I ask that because I think that helps us digest it. Those who weren't alive then, we don't have a concept of how this touched everyone. So here's your small town and your school, and you just listed three boys who knows what their futures could have been had they come home from the war, and they didn't get to. And I know when you went to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight Southern Nevada, you got to see where those three and the other 406,000 Americans who died in World War II were honored. But I also recognize in your story that this affected you for the rest of your life. You're a 19-year-old kid who suffers this injury in the back of that TBM Avenger, and physically, you've never been the same, right?
That's exactly right. Now, I was bent on having a nursery, a commercial nursery, and I gave that up because I could not have handled the work of a nursery. And when I got out of the Navy, after having been recalled for the Korean War, I decided I'm going to get a backup occupation. I went to Greeley, Colorado. I was sent to the dean of the graduate school, and he said, I tell you, Les, we can have you out of here a year from now with a teaching certificate and your master's degree. Oh, let's go for that, because I still had GI Bill. The job that was offered was here in Henderson, Nevada, and I've been here ever since.
How long did you teach?
30 years.
What'd you teach?
Biology and geology. Because I was an outdoorsman and needed a summer job, well, I was offered a summer job as day camp leader for the city of Las Vegas. Oh, yeah, I think what precipitated that was the fact that I believe most of our teachers at that time were from someplace else other than the desert. And so I had an in-service classes that would take the teacher on weekends from the dam, Lake Mead, its role in the Southwest. We even went to the dump, because at that time, lo and behold, we were burning all of the refuge, and there would be a huge black cloud going up over Sunrise Mountain.
So you would take the teachers out to Hoover Dam?
Oh, yes. Through the dam.
Uh-huh. Give them a guided tour. Explain
tour.
How it all works and all of that.
Yeah, right from the bottom.
Uh-huh.
Up to the very top.
And then you started doing that with school children.
For the kids. And we'd wind up in the Spring Mountains. And you know, there are vanilla pine trees up there and chocolate pine trees, as well as sarsaparilla.
Uh-huh.
And if you go up to the pines and just peel off a little bit of the bark and quickly smell it, you can there'll be a distinct odor of vanilla, chocolate, or sarsaparilla. But they would be going up there looking for these fossils. Fossils that were washed out of Kyle Canyon down with the rains over the years. And I would bet the kids that I could take and silver dollars were common at that time. I'd say, I'll bet you the silver dollar, I can throw it out there, and within arm's reach, I'll pick up a fossil. I never lost a dime. And then, yes, I did become a guide, a dam guide at Hoover Dam in the summers and on busy weekends, like at Christmas, New Year's. They need extra guides. And so I do that one. Never been without a job.
So what was your doctorate in?
Science education, biological sciences.
So between when you enlisted in World War II and the end of the Korean War, that's 10 years that you had either been active duty or reserve. And then you come here to Henderson, you're teaching, you start that day camp, you're doing all of that. And then during the Vietnam War, when a lot of people are trying to get out of serving, you decided that you wanted to be a part of our military again?
I was no longer in the reserve. Many of my students wound up going to Vietnam.
What did you do for the National Guard and the Army Reserve in the 60s, 70s, and 80s? What did they have you doing?
When the personnel officers looked at my academic record, he said, "You don't want to be a machinist. You're a biologist." I said, "Well, I guess you're right." He said, "Let's make you a medic. Will you accept that?" "Yes, that'd be real fine. I'd love that." And so I was the medical instructor for the new recruits coming into the National Guard or the Army Reserve who wanted to be medics.
And I don't want to get the wrong idea, but am I correct in understanding that these medics that you're instructing, that you're training, these are guys who would, in some cases, then deploy to Vietnam and are saving lives over there?
Oh, heck yes. Yeah.
For you, even though you didn't see combat in World War II, during the Korean War, or during the Vietnam War, you were part of that effort in all three of those wars, supporting what was happening. What kind of pride or satisfaction do you take in those contributions?
I'm glad to have done my duty. One of the things the Army Reserve stresses is that we are soldiers for life. You've heard that motto, I'm certain.
And you've lived it.
And I feel without half trying, I've been doing that.
And a few years ago, you got to fly to Washington, D.C., with a couple dozen other veterans and Honor Flight Southern Nevada to visit the National World War II Memorial and the Korean War Memorial and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall and other
and
spots.
And Lincoln and so forth, you bet.
Yeah. Tell me about that. What was it like for you?
Oh, that was actually, if you can imagine a bunch of older military people who have to clear their throat, maybe even wipe a tear or so. It was a warming experience to walk down the corridor in Baltimore Airport and see the people in that airport just parting the way for this group of old dogs coming through. It was a heartwarming experience. And I can only thank the people who have been the sponsors of the Honor Flight program for doing their part in making me clear my throat when I think of it. I've heard people fussing about, oh, I was never recognized when I came home. No, good gracious, there was no parade in my hometown. I don't know if my dad said hi or not, but there was a pitchfork in the manure pile, and he was hauling out. Back east, you collect that manure during the winter, okay, when you can't put the cows out. He was clearing that, and that was my welcome home, son.
Get back to work in the manure pile?
So, that the Honor Flight served a real purpose there. It was like, welcome home.
A whole lot better than a manure pile.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your service.
What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, soldier for life, because I love this country, and a teacher forever. If those kids I've had over the years, if those contacts I've had over the years have learned anything, and if I have helped them enjoy their teenage or their golden years, beautiful. What more can a person expect? One thing I would like to leave with every veteran listening to your program, keep your records. No, there is no useless record. It's amazing. I've gone through a couple of cases where that record, that one record, that piece of 8-inch by 4-inch paper that says, in my belief, this could only have happened as the patient describes.
Lester Bergwart, 94 years old. Don't forget to find photos and a short video with him online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. And thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.